This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And here's what we have in store this hour. I'm going to finish up my little story about politics and money. This all started with the revelation that John Cornyn is currently the leader in the clubhouse to be the next GOP leader in the Senate. That hurts. We're going to discuss why. Why does the left mischaracterize? Why do they accidentally compliment us when they're trying to insult us? There's a fascinating thing there that we're going to dig into. We're going to do some more emails. We'll have some fun, and then we'll check out of here until tomorrow and tomorrow's debate.
Can I get a witness?
Can I get a witness, Chris? So excited. Now to finish my story. I was running for Congress, in case you're just now joining us. I was running for Congress, young kid, didn't know anything. Finally won the primary, defeated the establishment guy. I'm expecting all this GOP money to come pouring in. Cause I'm dead broke. I need campaign money. This is long ago. This is 20 years ago. I'm dead broke. I need money. Surely the GOP will help, and nobody helps. No one comes in. There's no GOP money. It's almost as if it's been frozen for me for some reason. Okay, well, we can't quit. We're running for Congress. We got to get through. I fly back to Washington, D.C. If you ever run for national politics, we need to focus more locally. But if you run for national politics, you'll find that you have to do this. You have to fly around to raise money. I had to fly to Texas to raise money. Wonderful people here. I was just talking to a senator Friday night. He was at something in Texas. And that night he was flying to New York to raise money. Like, you just have to bounce around to raise money. So I was flying to D.C. to raise money. And pause the story for a moment, because I think I should probably add a little backstory that I didn't tell you at the beginning. John McCain was then a senator from Arizona. And John McCain did not like me. And for a variety of reasons, he didn't like me. One of the main reasons was I actually got up on stage during a Tea Party rally and endorsed his primary opponent. His name, oh yeah, Chris, I didn't care. I just didn't care at all. I just never worried about consequences. In fact, I still don't. That's why I get in trouble all the time. I didn't care. I didn't like him. And I got up on stage and endorsed his primary opponent against him. Of course, that gets right back to McCain, who then decides that, who is this young idiot? Never heard of this guy before. He's a nut job. Writes me off. Fine. I'm back in Washington, D.C. raising money. I am told that Jeff Flake wants to see me. Jeff Flake, that name probably won't mean anything to you, even though he went on to be a senator. He was, at the time, a member of the House of Representatives in Arizona. He would go on from there to become a senator, and that's a whole other story. I go sit down with Jeff Flake. He asked, you know, what are you doing here? Because I didn't like Jeff Flake either, and he didn't like me. And we were open about that. We didn't like each other. He's not my cup of tea. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm raising money. He said, oh, okay. Didn't offer any. And I said, well, you got any money? I said, do you want to? And he looked me dead in the eye. I'll never forget. I remember how he was standing. I was sitting. He was standing in front of his desk, and he put one of his feet up on his table doing that kind of lean in with the foot thing. And you know what he said to me when I asked if I could have some campaign money from him? You know what he said? Have you talked to John McCain yet? What did John McCain say? Didn't say yes. Didn't say no. This little lapdog just wanted to know. What did my dad say? Have you talked to my dad? Can I stay out after curfew? What did John McCain say? Okay. So I'm back in D.C. after the primary. I have no money. I'm raising money. I get word that John McCain wants to see me. I assume he's just going to yell at me, and I'm probably just going to yell back because I didn't care, and this was just going to be a big uncomfortable thing. But okay, whatever. I'll go see him, whatever. I go, and I sit down with John McCain in his office, and I watched him, one, spill coffee down in the front of him. It was a lid on a coffee cup that wasn't there. And it was hilarious because he just starts cussing like a sailor. He was just an old sailor with just this foul mouth. This is an old sailor. You didn't get to see it because it was public, but he was this old sailor. He starts cussing. Then he starts asking me, he's not yelling at me, he starts asking me about my time in the Marines. And so I tell him about that, and he starts telling me old stories about being in the Navy. I start telling old stories about being in the Marines. There's nothing about me endorsing against him, nothing that. He didn't ask me to apologize or anything. Like, there was nothing. And you could tell there was a moment in the meeting, he just decided he liked me personally. He hated my policies. I was far to the right of where he was. And he turns to his guy, his campaign guy, and kind of gives him one of these head nods. I see it. It's very obvious. It's in front of me. I get up, shake his hand. He's like, all right, well, we're going to get you some help. Something to that effect. That's not verbatim, I don't think, but it was something like that. Hey, we'll get you some help. All right. I turn around and walk out. Apparently, in that meeting, John McCain decided that he wanted me to get elected. And from that day forward, remember the guy who couldn't raise money? I'm burning up the phones. I can't raise a dime. We had a P.O. box. You have to have a P.O. box when you're running for Congress because crazy communists want to murder everybody. So we had a P.O. box. We would show up at the P.O. box, and there would be gigantic checks, maximum campaign checks every day. Most of them, most days, it was multiple. And these are not from people who I had called or asked. I didn't know who most of these people were, meaning most of these people didn't know anything about me. What happened? John McCain said, it's go time. John McCain told a guy who probably told a guy, hey, make some phone calls, raise him some money now. And from that point forward, we didn't have campaign money concerns. The money doesn't go to me. It was all for commercials and things like that. We ended up coming back to win. I always said come back to win. No, we didn't. Coming back, I ended up beating Gabrielle Giffords on Election Day. On Election Day voters, I won. But I had lost so many votes on early votes when I couldn't afford to have advertising up and she could, that she beat me by 4,000 votes. Crazy story, isn't it? It's a true story. But the moral of this story is that's how campaign money works, and that's how you buy favors and loyalty from people in politics. I've brought this up to you before. If I was elected, if I had been elected, let's say I got her, I won. And I went to the House of Representatives. If John McCain called me one day after that and asked me for a favor, now I don't think he would have even asked for me to vote against something I value or something like that. But what if he were to ask a favor that didn't even, nothing illegal, but something I didn't love, but hey, would you mind? What if the favor was, who's a member of the House of Representatives I hate, Chris? Don Bacon. Don Bacon in the House of Representatives. Let's say Don Bacon, he's that loser from Nebraska. Don Bacon and John McCain just happen to be friends. I'm making this up. I don't even know if they knew each other. And John McCain called me one day and said, hey, Jesse, Don Bacon wants a spot in GOP leadership in the House. Hey, would you mind voting for him? Would I be able to vote against him? I hope the answer is yes. But I'll tell you right now, after you go from not having a dime to spend to being flush with campaign cash and having a chance to win, your loyalty to somebody sure does adjust, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Be honest with yourself. It does. That's why losers like Mitch McConnell, John Cornyn, John Thune, that's why guys like this end up in GOP leadership because of the story I just told you. They don't spend time at home. They don't spend time in their districts. They don't hang out with their families. They don't do normal things that normal people want to do. Either they're in Congress assaulting your dollar and your liberty, or they are bouncing around the United States of America, fancy dinner here, fancy dinner there, fancy dinner there, and it's all fundraising. And they're done. Once they're done fundraising, they take these huge gobs of campaign cash and hand them out to other people in the GOP and potential people in the GOP to buy favors and buy votes down the road. Every GOP candidate with a chance right now to win their race against the Democrat, I mean, I bet you money, without even looking it up, I didn't even look it up, I bet you money John Cornyn's campaign has max donated to every one of those. And also, I would bet my mortgage on this. I bet you John Cornyn has been bundling and fundraising for those candidates. Why? So after the election, when he wants to be speaker, they feel that sense of loyalty. And that's how the swamp works. All right. We're going to do a couple emails, and then I'm going to talk about how they mischaracterize, why they mischaracterize us. Why do they miss it so bad? Before I do that, let me do this. I'm sure you've seen the horrible stories. We touched on them a little bit earlier about our pets being eaten by some of the new arrivals to the country. A little bit hard to hear, especially for anyone who loves their dog. I love my dog. I love Fred. When I left the house today, he's 70 pounds. He's enormous. And when I left today, he was snuggling with Ob like he's a lap dog. He thinks he's a lap dog. He does. He's just a big, fluffy idiot. And I love him. And we give him rough greens with every meal. We put rough greens on every single bowl of dog food. It's just this green powder you put on the food. Vitamins, minerals, probiotics, antioxidants. Your dog doesn't get these things from its food, and that's why your dog dies at 10 instead of 15. Our dogs die too early. Get your dog some Rough Greens. All natural nutritional supplement created by naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black. Call them 833-33-MY-DOG for a free jumpstart trial bag. Or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back. It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Of course, it's been an amazing Monday. And all right, I'm going to dig into this. I have to dig into this story. I'll do the emails later. If not, I'll get to them tomorrow. But send in your emails, jesse@jessekellyshow.com, because I find it so fascinating. There's something I find extremely fascinating. The communists, when they try to insult the right in various ways, it'll oftentimes come across as a compliment to people on the right. For instance, it came out in The Atlantic. I don't know if it's been in print yet or even if they still print that rag. If you want to know what it looks like, you go look at what I'm talking about online, but I'm about to describe it to you. The new cover of The Atlantic is this. You see a man on a carriage, a horse carriage, right? So there are horses in front of him. The carriage itself, inside of the carriage, is a big cage. It's a cage and it has an elephant in there. The guy who's driving the carriage is Donald Trump. You can see Trump from behind wearing a suit in a red MAGA hat, and he's got a big whip looking like he's getting ready to whip the horses, and he's driving this carriage with the GOP inside of it, and they're driving towards the Capitol. You can tell it's Washington, D.C., and the Capitol looks all dark and scary, too. Of course, The Atlantic is a filthy commie rag, and you should never watch it, never buy it. They hate Trump with the fire of a thousand suns, and they printed this. Somebody came up with this artwork, and they said to themselves, yeah, man, that makes Trump look bad, scary, awful. And every single person who's seen it today has said, oh, man, that looks cool. Hey, Trump looks cool. And I was just brewing on that and figuring out, why does that happen so often? This is not a one-off. This is really, really common. They will do and say things that in their minds make us sound dreadful, but for us, they sound awesome. Here's a good example. Oliver Stone, he's the filmmaker, Oliver Stone, a lefty, totally insane person. But Oliver Stone made a movie years ago. You've probably seen it. If you haven't seen it, you've heard of it. A movie called Wall Street. It was supposed to be a really ugly, negative look at how Wall Street works and how it looks. That's what the movie was supposed to be. And the bad guy in the movie, he's played by Michael Douglas, but it was a guy named Gordon Gekko. When they wrote this movie, Gordon Gekko, this character, was supposed to represent all that was soulless and evil and wrong about America and the stock market. And you remember, you've probably heard some version of this speech somewhere. It's famous from the movie.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
He was supposed to be the bad guy in the movie. You should see Chris laughing. Chris has never seen the movie. It's from before his time. Chris thought he was the good guy. He thought he was the protagonist in the movie. He's not the protagonist in the movie. The protagonist in the movie is Charlie Sheen, who plays the young stockbroker who brings down Gordon Gekko in the end. Gecko's the bad guy, Chris. Only America loved him. They loved Gordon Gekko, the character, so much that when Hollywood was trying to come up with another idea that'll make any money, they made a Wall Street sequel, of course, featuring who? Did it feature Charlie Sheen, the protagonist from the first one? No. It featured Gordon Gekko. Michael Douglas became a beloved character across the country. And here's why. It's going to sound dark, and maybe it is dark, but it's true. You value things that they not only don't relate to, they despise the things that you prize. You get that? They despise what you prize. And I didn't realize that was going to rhyme until I said it now. Gosh, that's glorious. They despise the things you prize. And this is what I've been trying to get home about, how we really are two totally separate species. You prize, you treasure things like merit, hard work, accomplishment, heroism, beauty, things like that are wonderful to you. Wonderful to you. You have to understand and accept that those are the very things leftists hate. They hate those things. It's why every time they try to insult you, they end up complimenting you, because they are fearful of and hate everything you treasure. And you see it in their artwork. And you see it when they try to lampoon the other side. You see it when they try to make a movie with a caricature about you. You see it. All right. I have another example of why it's failing them. Next. It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Do not forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, on Spotify, on iTunes. The very things you value, those are the things they hate. It's why when they try to make you look scary, it does look scary and awful and infuriating to them, and it looks wonderful to you. It's why they blew it so bad with Tim Walz. This comes back to actually that. Here's a headline for you. I'll read you a couple things from this. Harris falling behind among male voters in key states. Vice President Harris faces a major challenge winning over male voters and is losing men by a bigger margin than she's winning women in key states like Pennsylvania, Nevada, and North Carolina. And they give it away right here. You skip a couple paragraphs down. A senior Democratic aide said sexism and misogyny are still powerful forces in the country's battleground states. Misogyny is a hell of a drug, the source quipped, who said the problem reared its head when Hillary Clinton was the Democrat nominee 8 years ago. And you scroll down a little bit more there. They're quoting some Ross Baker. He's some guy at Rutgers. Baker said Harris's choice of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, a former high school football coach, as her running mate, appeared designed to give the Democrat ticket more appeal with male voters. And he's describing how the Democrat team saw Walz. Quote, they saw him as a man's man. And I think the idea was that he was somebody who could connect with these very alienated male voters who feel that the trend of national policy in recent years has been very much tilted in the favor of women. Democrats looked at this guy and thought, yeah, that's a man's man who will fool those male voters.
And we did something a little bit. We banned banning books, especially banning LGBTQ books for themes in that.
They don't even have any idea what a man looks like. They grabbed some goober because he used to be an assistant football coach and because he did 24 years in the National Guard before scamming out of deploying with his men. They looked at that and thought, yeah, that's the man's man who will calm those men down and get them voting for us. We don't even resemble the same species of human being. If you looked at Tim Walz ever in your life and thought to yourself, that's a man's man, golly, you need to get out more. Anyway, speaking of Dome, she was asked if she's going to confiscate your guns.
I think it's a great idea, but I mean, listen, I don't think we lack for great ideas. As I've said many times, we've been having great ideas for decades. The problem is that Congress does not have the courage to act. And that is why, from the beginning, I have said my agenda includes attempting to get Congress to act, but if they don't within the first 100 days of my administration, I'm going to take executive action. Because what we need is action.
She's going to take executive action on confiscating your guns? That's what the question was. Here's Warnock, Raphael Warnock, senator from Georgia. Seems to be thinking the same thing.
Should she also be, in your opinion, supporting a mandatory gun buyback program?
Listen, we're not going to be able to get where we need to go without action in Congress. We've got to pass some laws to a deal with this. Now, I was heartened by the fact that 2 years ago, we finally did a gun safety law.
Just quick note, that gun safety law he's talking about, that was courtesy of John Cornyn. the one who right now is going to be the next GOP leader in the Senate unless we stop it. Just wanted to remind you that's where that law came from.
Safer Communities Act. And it was the first gun safety law we passed in 30 years.
Courtesy of John Cornyn.
30 years. And it was modest, but it did save lives. But clearly, in the wake of what happened just the other day in Winder, Georgia, it's not enough. And the least we can do is move forward on the bipartisan spaces where ordinary people agree. Clearly, there's a disconnect between what the people, the American people, want and what they're able to get out of their government. Again, 87% of Americans believe in background checks. And yet I hear politicians say that it's not guns who kill people, it's people who kill people. And yet we don't even want to know who those people are. We won't even support.
Senator, just yes or no, though. Should she support the mandatory buyback program? Just a yes or no.
Listen, look, as a pastor, I've done buyback programs. You can pick this issue or that issue. But I think that, yeah, again, there's not one single thing that will make all of this go away.
Mandatory gun buyback. Just so we're all clear, mandatory means give me your gun or you're a criminal. Give me your gun or I'll send the police or the FBI to your door to throw you in a cage for not giving me your gun. This is no longer some fringe thing. Dome supports that, and she's been on the record supporting that for years. Mainstream Democrats now support that. Ooh-wee. Might get a little spicy. Got a little spicy at this city council meeting in Chicago. This woman's having none of it.
You leave the Democratic Party. Do just like RFK Jr. Just do like that Tulsa lady. You better get up out the Democratic Party. Save yourself. Save your families. Save your dignity. Save your jobs and save your seat. Because if y'all don't, we coming for your seats. We ain't taking this no more. From a bunch of people who have broke into the country and now have completely broke the city, have completely broke the country, have completely disgraced the United States of America. America is a disgrace. And for us, oh my God, what a solution. You give us a fake, black, cackling hand of a candidate with a vice president.
She's upset. Look, listen to how fast, this is in Alabama. Remember, this is everywhere across the country. It's not just New York, it's not LA, it's not Ohio, it's not Chicago, it's Alabama. Listen to how fast they shut this down.
Do we know where the individuals we're discussing are coming from? Where their point of origin is? Because you're treating them like lawful U.S. citizens, which they are not.
Okay, so I'm gonna cut it off because we've had three people to come up. I'm gonna cut it off because we have no reason. Again, we have no reason to launch an investigation or to treat people differently because of how they look. There's no reason for it.
Who said that?
Well, that's just what I'm saying. I just said that. Tiffany just said that.
Okay, so I didn't say that.
But I said it, but there's no...
Haiti is a failed state. Their president was assassinated in 2021. There is no way the State Department can vet these individuals.
We're done, and I'm going to ask this.
Please let him talk.
A citizen showed up at a city council meeting asking why his small Alabama town is all of a sudden looking like Haiti, and they just flat out closed the meeting. And I just wanted to remind you once again that Democrats and James Lankford did this to you on purpose.
Starting with our administration, we gave TPS, temporary protected status, to Haitian migrants, 55,000. And then more recently, we extended temporary protected status to over 100,000 Haitian migrants for that very reason, that they need support, they need protection.
30,000 a month. That's how many they're flying and busing into the country on your dime, remaking America. If you vote Democrat this November, you're trash. You can't vote for that. You're voting for the replacement and the destruction of your own country and your own citizens. You can't vote for that anymore. It's gone. Sorry. They're gone. All right. Hang on. It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. I'm as excited as you are for debate night tomorrow night. It's going to be so great. Chris, do you think, I'm going to put this out there, and if you don't like it, just send it right back. Do you think we should have a guest on tomorrow to talk about the debate? I don't know. I think that'd be kind of lame. And what, Chris, what? Well, that's what I was thinking. Chris said, who knows more about it than me? I can't think of anyone. Like, what, Chris? What, I can't think of anybody. You know what we should do? Actually, we should try to get Spicer on tomorrow. Spicer is so good at those things. Chris, reach out to Spicer, and we'll see if we can get Spicer on tomorrow. We probably should talk about this off the air. I realize everyone's listening right now, but I feel like this is the best time to have this conversation. this dude is on CNBC. Pushing back about the whole dome not doing interviews.
You know, she talks to people, right? She's reaching out to me. She's reaching out to businesses.
She hasn't talked to the press, Gina. I mean, I know you're a surrogate, but the American people are frustrated. The media is frustrated at the amount of access anyone's gotten to her for the past 41 days. I know you've seen that. We're finally going to have a debate tomorrow night, but she sat down for one interview that was taped and then cut down, and certain little things came out from it, but it has been a master class in avoiding any questions, and nothing's been made clear by her. Maybe it's been made clear in dribs and drabs from her policymakers when it comes out in print or off a teleprompter at one of her scripted speeches. She's been impossible to pin down on anything because she hasn't given any access.
Look, you can say a lot of things about Dome. Impossible to pin down wouldn't be one of the ways I'd put it, but this is it.
So you know how those lids are, because this is, well, I'm just going to speak, okay? So this is it. So you know how those lids on those Starbucks cups, they're white, right? And so if you wear lipstick, they get all over the lid. And so then I find myself in meetings if I'm the only woman, and that's kind of, and so I keep taking the lid off and having my cup out so that I don't have that big lipstick mark on the lid.
So this might be the next president.
I said, can we do something about the color of the lid? So that was that conversation.
I'm thinking about getting a new ice maker for the house. Not a replacement ice maker. The one I have is, it's heaven, really. But I'm thinking about getting an ice maker for every room in the house. I'm not, obviously financially that's not going to happen right now, but Christmas is coming up. Well, yeah, Chris, they are a lot of money. I'm not going to be made fun of by you. That last one we bought was like $35, $40. I'm not going to buy one for every room in the house yet. But I think if I start investing now over time, that I can eventually get to the place where I will have endless ice in every room. What, Chris? What's your problem with it? How would you plumb it? Chris, I don't have one that's plumbed, buddy. You have to pour water in it. It just plugs into the wall and you pour water in it and it makes some ice. Did you think I was going to spend the money to have one installed or installed? Well, I can do that, but it would be ugly. I don't know how to do it. I actually asked Tim Burchette. He's a congressman from Tennessee. I asked him today. He's on my TV show tonight. Remember, I have a TV show every night, 9 p.m. Eastern time on the First TV. I asked him if he had an ice maker, and he Tommy Toppered me right there on the air. You know what? He said when they first moved into their house, they have one of the trash compactor things. You ever see one of those? The ones that pull out, you put the trash in, they mash it down. He had the thing ripped out. And he put a freaking ice maker in there that's plumbed. Yeah, how sick is that? Mine just sits on the counter. Did you think I had a plumbed ice maker, Chris? No. Gosh, no. No, I didn't. But I want a countertop one for every room. And I feel like that's something I could make happen. Over time. Over time. Not right now. Over time. I feel like I can make that happen. I'm still angry about this woman. Just this woman in Ohio. Her and her husband. Watching their life be ripped apart by Democrats.
What I'm seeing, it is so unsafe in my neighborhood anymore. I have the homeless that were trying to camp out, and I have made concessions with them, and I try to help them the best I can to keep them from trying to squat on my property. But it is so unsafe. I have men that cannot speak English in my front yard screaming at me, throwing mattresses in my front yard, throwing trash in my front yard. and I can't. I look at me, I weigh 95 pounds. I couldn't defend myself if I had to. My husband is elderly, and last night, after living in this home for 45 years, he said, Noelle, guess what? It's time to pack up and move. He said, we can't do this anymore. He said, it's killing both of us mentally. I don't understand what you expect of us as citizens. I mean, I understand they're here under temporary protected status and you're protecting them. And I understand that our city services are overwhelmed and understaffed. But who's protecting us? If we're protecting them, who's protecting me?
95 years old. 95 pounds, I mean. Elderly woman. Husband's elderly. Lived in Springfield, Ohio for 45 years. And now they have savages on their lawn. Threats of violence because Democrats got elected and opened up the border of the country on purpose. Freaking evil, man. Evil. All right. Speaking of evil, Hamas still continues. Israel still under attack all the time. And because of our media and the way our media is gone, they assume that America doesn't care. Or even worse, especially when it comes to the Democrats, they assume the media is on the other side, or America's on the other side, I should say. That's what they assume. You know, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, it's there to provide not just prayer for these people. It's there to provide firefighting equipment, bunkers, bulletproof ambulances. How bad does it suck to live in a place where you even need that now? But that's what they go through over there all the time. They need your support. If you can, go to supportifcj.org. Supportifcj.org. It's one word. All right? All right.
And now,
here's a headline.
By the go, you know the thing.
Headlines we didn't get to.
70% of migrants under Biden came here illegally. I can't stand that they continue to use that word migrant, but yes, of course they did. This is done on purpose, and I want to remind you, like I said in the open, if you're an evil person, you're a Democrat or one of the ones in Republican leadership, if you're an evil person who doesn't care about America or American citizens, an open border is all good for you. All the things that come from it are good things. We are being attacked from our own government. Landlord forced to sell Colorado apartment complex after it was taken over by Venezuelan migrant gang Tren de Aragua. We have landlords selling off their property because prison gangs from Venezuela were allowed into the country by Democrats. Both House and Senate control will hinge on the outcome of a handful of races. I want to once again remind you that Donald Trump is not the only one who needs your vote this November. And I also want to remind you, if we get a GOP House and GOP Senate and the White House, yet we have John Cornyn as head of the Senate, all of it will pretty much be for naught. So call your Republican senator tonight. Send him an email. Send him a message on social media if you can. Get the word out. Don't you dare vote for John Cornyn. All right? That's all.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.